facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the program. It is Tuesday, February the 23rd, 2021, Stardate 2021. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is the toll-free line if you want to call and talk to me. 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. My Twitter handle is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we also have a show account too, at Cale Clark Show. The email address, cale@relevantradio.com. Lots to get to today. Lots to talk about. I don't know if we're going to have time to cover it all. It's the feast day of St. Polycarp and his grisly martyrdom. Wow, what a powerful story that is. I hope to be able to get to that. There's also a viral video that went out this past weekend. It just got crazy, crazy attention on social media. And it's somewhat troubling about what's going on with youth in our country and the character that they display, or lack thereof. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But first of all, just really quickly, prayers up for Tiger Woods. And I don't know if you've heard the news, if you've been on Twitter, if you've been on social media, if you've been watching TV, you've probably heard this by now, but Tiger Woods was hospitalized today after a really bad single car accident that he was involved in LA County. It was early this morning. It was about 7 a.m., just after 7 a.m. local time. And in fact, officials had to use the jaws of life to free him from the vehicle. The LA Sheriff's Department responded to the single vehicle rollover collision on the border of Rolling Hills Estates and Rancho Palos Verdes. I probably didn't say that right. Palos Verdes, I guess. You can tell I've never been there. But anyways, the driver and sole occupant was identified as the PGA golfer Eldrick Tiger Woods. Yes, his real name is Eldrick, but you probably knew that. Anyways, this was a bad wreck. As I said, they had to get him out with the jaws of life. He, last I heard, and I haven't, I've been a little busy with show preparations, but so I haven't been on Twitter lately. I don't know the very latest up to the minute, but I did hear that he was taken into surgery. His agent, Mark Steinberg, said that Tiger was in hospital and he was currently undergoing, this was about noon local time out in LA, a procedure or procedures on his leg or legs. It was some sort of a really bad leg injury that required surgery. So not clear what caused the accident. There is an investigation underway. And Tiger was in LA to take part in the Genesis Invitational Golf Tournament, which he is involved in at some level as a sponsor. And that, of course, took place over the weekend. If you're a golf fan, you probably saw this on CBS Sports. And in a conversation that he had with Jim Nantz, he talked about the fact that he might not be able to play in the Masters this year. I would say that's probably a definite at this point after what happened to him. And let's pray that this is something that he can recover from. He had had recently back surgery, and he thought that that was going to keep him out of the Masters coming up. And it's not the first time, by the way, that Tiger Woods has been in a very serious car accident. Obviously, back in 2009, you all know the story there. His marriage unraveled to Elin Nordegren, revelations of his affairs. This happened back in 2009 when he crashed his SUV into, really, I think it was a tree, if memory serves me correctly, or was it a fire hydrant? I don't know. It was a little fuzzy, but it was a bad crash. And this was back at his home in Florida. And in 2017, he was arrested after cops found him passed out behind the wheel of his car. So that was only 4 years ago. And at that time, you might remember this, Tiger had taken prescription medication before the accident. And he says that he didn't realize the effects that the meds were going to have on him. I think he was recovering from a surgery at that point as well. One of his many, many back surgeries that he's had over the years. And anyway, our prayers are with him, his family. I hope he'll recover. He's definitely my favorite golfer of all time. I know he's had his struggles in his personal life. And we might actually talk about that a little bit because it does fit into something I wanted to get to later about character and parenting and stuff like that. I think that had a lot to do with the struggles that he had earlier in his life. And producer Lucas just whispered in my ear that the sheriff is saying that there is no evidence of impairment involved in the crash right now. So that's good news. That's mighty good news, at least so far. So let's pray for Tiger. Let's pray for a quick recovery and pray that he's okay. And by the way, this is why situations like this, I am all for autonomous driving. I'm all for robo-taxis. I am all in on these advancements. I'm all in on what companies like Tesla are doing with full automated driving capability. And I know that it's had its bumps along the road. I was talking with someone on Twitter about this recently. I know that there have been some problems along the road, and it hasn't been perfect, but it's getting really, really, really good. And it, in the end, this is going to save a lot of lives. I think in 30 years, they're probably, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that most of us will be driving electric vehicles. GM has already said that by 2035, they don't want to make any more ICE vehicles. And by ICE, I mean internal combustion engines. They're going to go all electric. And the autonomous revolution in driving is going to help save lives because, let's face it, I'm no expert, but I'm guessing that the three biggest causes of death or injury on the road would be impaired driving, DUIs, someone's driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. The second thing would be, and again, I'm not ranking these in terms of the numbers of deaths or injuries. I don't know. Maybe you would know better than I. Maybe you could tweet at me at Cale Clark and let me know what the stats are. But driver fatigue, I would say, would be right up there. Tired driving, when you're driving really tired, that can be just as bad as driving under the influence at some level because you're just not, you're not alert, you're not aware. And I would say the third thing, and it's might be the second thing, I don't know, is distracted driving. Distracted driving. How many people do you see as you're out driving around and texting, surfing the internet on their smartphones, not paying? I've seen guys do this on the highway, driving at Mach 3, you know, passing me on a superhighway, texting. And I can see that. I see them. They're looking at their phones. They're not even looking at the road. And unless they do, unless they are in an autonomously driven car, which I don't think they are at this point because they're fairly rare still. That, I mean, they're clearly putting themselves and everybody else at risk. So I am all for these advancements in technology that we're going to be seeing over the next few decades. I'm all for it. It's going to save a lot of lives, people unnecessarily dying and getting hurt seriously, crippled in some cases for life. There's really no need for it in most cases. And anything we can do to eliminate that stuff, we should do that. So that's my little mini take on that. Maybe we'll talk about that in more depth on another episode. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. 888-914-9149. I don't know if you saw the viral video that was going around on social media over the weekend involving Cam Newton, another professional athlete. And by the way, this is not a sports story. It involves a professional athlete, but this is really not at all a story about sports. It's about what's going on in our culture today. So Cam Newton, famous NFL quarterback, he was the most valuable player of the league back in 2015 with the Carolina Panthers. Well, he spent last season with the New England Patriots, and things didn't go so well, really, at the end of the day. And Patriots fans, you know this. He started off really well. I mean, I watched a game at the beginning of the season when the Patriots were playing the Seattle Seahawks, and yeah, he had big shoes to fill, big cleats to fill, I guess you could say, taking over for Tom Brady. Now, Cam's been pretty successful in his own right, but replacing the GOAT, replacing Tom Brady on the Patriots, that's no easy task, especially when they didn't have a lot of weapons for him to play with at the wide receiver position. But nonetheless, he was throwing darts. He was throwing BBs against the Seahawks. He looked amazing to me. But as the season wore on, I think he was hurt. I really do think he was struggling with some serious injuries. He just wasn't really performing that well. And so he had this one-year contract with the Patriots, and he's a free agent now. All reports are that the Patriots will not resign him, and he's going to be looking for a new team. But in the offseason right now, he conducts these football camps. As he always does, he tries to give back to youth, tries to give back to the community. And he was conducting his annual football camp, coaching one of the teams in that camp. And a kid, a high school student, who's also, you know, a high school football player, started heckling Cam Newton. He's part of the camp. He is one of Cam Newton's campers here. And he starts trash-talking Cam Newton. And this was captured on video. Here's the audio.
You ass. You're a free agent. You're a free agent. I'm rich. You're a free agent. I'm rich. You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're about to be poor.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich.
You're a free agent.
I'm rich. He's a free agent. Where your daddy is? Let me talk to your dad. Let me talk to your dad. Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Talk to your dad. I'm not talking to little boy.
You're a free agent. You ass.
Talk to him. Where's your dad? Where's your pop?
In case you couldn't make out what was going on there, this student was heckling Cam Newton about the fact that he's going to be a free agent. He doesn't have a team right now. His career may be on the downside, maybe not. Hopefully he'll bounce back. But this kid is heckling him saying, you're a free agent, you're going to be poor, which is absolutely preposterous, of course. Cam Newton has made over $100 million in his career. He's far from being destitute. But Cam responds by saying, where's your dad? I want to talk to your dad. I want to talk to your dad. I want to have a conversation with your father. And obviously, this was an interesting, to say the least, taken. And I think here's what was going on here. I think this young student, and his name was Jaseth Owens, as it turns out, and he's since issued a public apology, but he was under heavy pressure to do so. I hope it's a sincere apology. And he's saying, I hope I can find forgiveness for what I said. I wasn't trying to incite any kind of, well, I'm not so sure he wasn't trying to go viral here, folks. I think he was trying to go viral. I think this kid wanted his friends to think he was a big shot. Wow, I can't believe you would say that to an NFL legend. I think he wanted this to go viral, and it did, but for all the wrong reasons. As soon as this thing got out, actual NFL football players, who this kid wants to be, he wants to get into the NFL, obviously, he wants to be a professional player, extremely difficult to do so. I'd say probably less than 1% of all high school players actually get to play in the NFL. But Leonard Fournette, a lot of NFL players started reacting to this on Twitter. Current players like Leonard Fournette, who recently won the Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He wrote on Twitter, any young athlete watching this video, please don't be this kid. Don't be this kid. Don't miss your chance to learn something from someone who has been there at the highest level in the sport. Stay humble. Stay humble. And Cam said, listen, I'm trying to help kids. Everything I can do to help kids, I'm going to do that. And someone who I really admire in broadcasting, Louis Riddick, who works for ESPN, you probably know him best as being one of the voices of Monday Night Football on ESPN. He's one of the analysts there. It's probably the biggest gig that he would be well known for. But he was an NFL football player as well himself. And he has aspirations of being a general manager. He was a finalist for being the GM of the New York Giants a few years ago, didn't get the job. It went to Dave Gettleman, who used to work for the Panthers. But I really respect Louis Riddick. I really respect his professionalism, his preparation, his takes on things. And he had a lot to say about this incident, about this kid heckling Cam Newton and what it says about what's going on with youth in America today. Listen to what he said this morning on Get Up, a show hosted by Mike Greenberg on ESPN. Here's Louis Riddick.
Look, you know, Greeny, what it took me back to, quite honestly, was like when I was a kid, when I was in sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, and my brother and my cousins were playing at the professional level, and I was around locker rooms with guys like, you know, James Lofton from the Green Bay Packers, and was introduced to guys like John Jefferson, and I was around guys like Jim Haslett and Joe Ferguson with the Buffalo Bills, and Daryl Talley, Cornelius Bennett, all these guys. I mean, I couldn't imagine at the time, no matter what point in their career that they were at, ever talking to them with that kind of disrespect and or telling them that they're a free agent or that, you know, they're washed up or that their careers, their skills were diminishing, and just feeling as though like I had the right to even talk to someone that way, regardless of whether or not they truly were on the downside of their career. And it really bothered me that we're at a point now that for some reason, some way, shape, or form, that we feel as though we're entitled to do that kind of thing. You know, that whole fan perspective, that old BS perspective about, look, we pay their salaries, we're allowed to, you know, we have a right to express our disappointment and or our opinions. Yeah, you know what, maybe you do have a right to express your opinions, but there's also something called respect, and there's also something called decency, and I don't really know what you think about Cam at this point in his career. He doesn't deserve to be talked to in that way, in that forum, in front of other people, given everything that he's accomplished, because I just never would have dreamed of doing it. And look, I didn't really need my parents to tell me that that's not the right thing to do. But right now, I mean, we're failing in some way, shape, or form if the youth of our country feels as though they have a right to talk to people that way, in any kind of forum, quite honestly. It's not just involving sports, with anyone who is in positions, you know, where they have attained something that we are aspiring to be, or they have attained some kind of status that we are aspiring to try and attain, and they've set a good example for us. So it just really struck me the wrong way. I'm not shocked by it. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happening throughout our society right now. And like, and quite honestly, I said, look, instead of being too shocked about it and spending too much time being angry about it, try to do something to change it. Try to do something to positively impact the youth of our country. And so that kind of thing doesn't happen, because it's something that really, really just rubbed me the wrong way.
That was Lewis Riddick from ESPN. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. And look, I don't want to sound like a crotchety old guy, get off my lawn, but I really do think there's something to what he's saying. When he said, especially, this line really caught me, when Lewis Riddick said, we are failing the youth of our country. I think he's right. I think he's right. We've been fed this diet of relativism in the culture for so long. And, you know, Pope Benedict used to talk about this all the time. We were living in a dictatorship of relativism. This idea, relativism is this idea that there's no truth. And ironically, that is a truth statement. When you say there is no truth, they think that's true, people who posit this. So this dictatorship of relativism, Benedict said, it's not just that people don't think that there is any truth, any absolute truth, any moral truth. If you don't believe this, if you're not on board with this, you're going to be persecuted. That's why it's a dictatorship of relativism. And this isn't just ivory tower talk. This isn't just a bunch of academics talking about this idea of relativism in university hall, you know, lecture rooms, in faculty lounges, if you will. This stuff filters down like the snow melting from the mountain peaks. Eventually, it's going to run down. It's going to water the valley below, the springs. And these are the springs that we're going to drink from in the culture. They do filter down. So if you're a parent out there, and if society is saying there is no right, there is no wrong, well, how do you teach your kids right and wrong? If society is saying there is no truth, how do you teach people truth? How do you teach your kids how to respect their elders? And I know that sounds like a quaint, old-fashioned idea, but that's really what was going on here, a lack of respect for an older person. Now, he wasn't that much older. Cam Newton's only 31 years old, for goodness sakes. But this is what's called, or used to be called, the virtues. So we're in a situation right now where social media is essentially the conscience of the culture. It's the wisdom of the crowd that decides whether or not someone is going to be punished in the form of maybe being canceled. They're deplatformed. They're done, you know, in their profession. If they're an actor, whatever, they've said something wrong, they're done. Their career is over because we have said so. And you know what? Some people probably need to be disciplined in that regard. But if social media is the conscience of our age, we're in big trouble. We are in big, big, big trouble. So we need to get back to teaching character based on truth. And how do we do that? How do we do that? So this is the question that I want to ask you today. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. How did you, if you're a parent listening to me right now, how do you or how did you impart character to your kids? And how do we impart character to adults, for that matter? And maybe if you're not a parent, you could answer by saying this, you know, how did your parents impart character to you? Because we're in a strange situation right now. We're in the age of information. We're in the age of Google. You can look up the answer to anything in half a second. So knowledge is, in a sense, cheap. It's out there. It's easy to find. But what we're really short on is wisdom. We have a lot of facts. We can know a lot of stuff. We pump kids' heads full of information, but they have no idea what to do with it. They have no idea what to do with it. We've never been in a generation that's known so much, but been so foolish. And really what we've cultivated here is a culture of highly skilled barbarians who are bereft of a true morality based on truth, and in many cases, bereft of character. And this is what I want to talk about today. So how do you as parents impart character to your kids? How do you do it for adults? And it's never too late. It's never too late. We do know this. And so this is what I really want to talk to you about today on the show. This has really been bothering me after seeing this clip, and it bothers me almost as much as it's bothered Lewis Riddick. But when we come back, there is hope, because there is someone out there in the culture. I'm going to tell you, this guy is the guru of how to pass on character, even when there really hasn't been there much character there before. We're going to be right back after this break. Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back.
Pop quiz. Where do they keep the sacred vestments and sacred vessels used at Mass? Give up in the sacristy. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our sixth Lenten lesson on the Mass. The sacristy is a special room in the church, usually next to the sanctuary, which many of the faithful never see. The sacristy is where the priest vests for Mass. And in the sacristy, there are closets for vestments, shelves for storing the various liturgical ornaments used in the Mass, candles, thurible, cruets, bells, bread, wine, etc., and a strong safe for the sacred vessels, such as the chalice, ciborium, and monstrance. Frequently in the sacristy, there will be a special sink for cleansing the sacred vessels and linens called a sacrarium, and it drains directly into the natural ground. Above the countertop where the priest's vestments are laid out, you might also see a copy of the Vesting Prayers.
Sign up to receive Father Rocky's Lenten lessons by email, and new this year, a daily bonus video with an even more detailed look at the Mass. Sign up today on the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. 1-888-914-9149. We're talking about this viral video that appeared over the weekend where this high school student disrespected Cam Newton, trash-talked him in front of all these people at the football camp where he was a participant, Cam Newton's own football camp, and this went viral for all the wrong reasons. But thankfully, some people tried to talk some sense into this young man. He since apologized. Let's hope that is sincere. So we're talking about how to inculcate character in people, especially the young. How do we do that? Well, probably the best person I've ever heard at this is a guy named Jim Stenson. No, not Jim Henson, who created the Muppets. This is a different guy. Jim Stenson. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, but you should Google him. He's written some interesting books, very, very good books, such as Compass, which is a handbook on parent leadership. He's also written The Father, The Family Protector. It's a great book. And he's written a lot about parenting. And how does he know so much about this? What makes him an expert on this? And by the way, I should tell you, I almost ran over this guy. I heard him give a talk in Toronto a few years ago. And I was really excited about this. I couldn't wait. And I was driving into the parking lot where he was, the place where he was going to speak. And I was trying to get out of the way of this other car. And I wasn't being reckless or anything, but I had to kind of go a little faster than I wanted to. And he just stepped out right in front of me. He was smoking his pipe and he saw me and he had that deer in the headlights look. And anyways, he almost never got to the talk, but thankfully everything was fine. So that was my introduction to Jim Stenson. His life flashed before his eyes. But he gave an excellent talk that night on how to educate in virtue. And that's really what's going on here. We're trying to build character. We're trying to build people in the virtues. Now, again, how does he know so much about this? Well, he founded two private schools for young men in the United States. One is called The Heights, which is in the Washington, D.C. area. And the other one was called Northridge Prep outside of Chicago in the suburbs. And really, the theme of these schools was character education for young men. And so he had an interesting question over the years. Now, he spent over 30 years in education as the headmaster of these schools. And Jim Stenson started asking himself this question. Because obviously, he got to know not only the kids, but he got to know the parents as well. And one question that kept coming back to him was, why is it that some kids make a mess out of their lives and some kids turn out to be very, very successful? And he wondered whether the parents had something to do with that. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, you don't have to be Einstein to make that deduction, but still, why is it that some kids, despite having every advantage that you could possibly think of in life, come from a loving family, all that sort of stuff, they make terrible choices. Some of them get involved in terrible relationships, substance abuse, criminal records. They never fulfill their potential. They bounce from a series of, you know, dead-end jobs one to another. They never really make it in life. They become kind of a failure, in a sense. Still loved by God, of course, but not really functioning optimally. But then other students turn out to be incredibly well-adjusted, incredibly mature, incredibly inspiring to their peers, responsible, tough-minded, compassionate, courageous, brave, men of purpose whose confidence made them just, you know, just really attracted to people, sense of humor, were able to just be leaders. Why? What was the difference? So he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start interviewing the parents of the successful kids and the parents of the not so successful kids at a human level. What is the difference? And he figured if he could write about this, it might help a lot of people. So that's really what he did. And that's a lot of the wisdom in his books comes from what he saw from these families. And I think it's a great approach. It's absolutely a great approach. And at the end of the day, his results can be summed up in one word: character. He said that parents who had successful children, who became successful adults, they really focused a lot on their interior formation, especially their character. The strengths of mind, will, and heart that you really can't see. And parents that had kids that didn't quite make it in life or became a disappointment, he found that the parents of those kids, they spent very, very little time thinking about the sort of men. And obviously, he's dealing with an all-boys school, but the same could be said if it was an all-girls school. It doesn't really matter. These parents didn't spend hardly any time thinking about the kind of people that they were raising, the type of men that they would grow up to become. If they did have thoughts about their children's future, they tended to be focused on what they would do in terms of a career. Oh, he's going to be an investment banker, or he's going to be a doctor, he's going to be a lawyer. Not really thinking too much about who they are. And so they saw very, very, in a very fuzzy manner, what their mission, what their objectives were as parents. And if they did think about family life at all, they tended to think of it was really just a series of pleasant activities, one after another. You know, a vacation to Saint-Tropez or whatever, and then we're going skiing in the wintertime. No real pain involved, if that makes any sense. So he found that the home environment was such an influence on how these kids turn out. So as a parent myself, this is of great interest to me. How can you balance out? Obviously, we all want our kids to be, to have a fulfilling career, to pay back society in some way for the gifts that they've been given, but also on their character. How do we do that? And this is such an important task in today's society. And this is why I think Cam Newton said to this young man, I want to talk to your dad. I want to talk to your dad and figure out why this is happening. Nothing is more important than this. This is what we need. We need men and women of character in the culture to help renew it, because it's in a bad place right now. It's in a bad place right now. So young parents especially, they need to know that love, I mean, we talk about loving our kids. Yes, we've all got to love our kids, but love is more than sentimentality. As St. Jose Maria Escrivá used to say all the time, love is deeds, not sweet words. And that's true when it comes to our love of God. You can't say, I love God, and then hate your neighbor, and you never pray, and all that stuff. It's the same thing with parenting. We've got to learn and teach our kids to learn to endure hardship, endure difficulty, to struggle, to make sacrifices for the sake of someone else. And that's really what love is. Love is sacrifice. Look at the crucifix. If you live your life in that way, if you give your whole self to others, that is the most noble achievement that you can ever have in this world. And you will be happy too. You will be happy. True love will lead to true happiness. True holiness leads to true happiness. If you want to be happy, be holy. If you want to be even happier, be even holier. That's what St. Jose Maria used to say. So this is huge. We talk about character. How do we do that? How do we do that? Well, I think really it's all about forming people in the virtues. So what are the seven great virtues? I'm a person who really didn't hear much about the virtues growing up. I don't know if you can identify. I didn't have that kind of education growing up. I wasn't taught about it in school. I didn't necessarily hear about the virtues by their classical names. I think I did hear about it at some level, maybe in another way. Instead of fortitude, I might have heard about being tough-minded, that sort of thing. But let's look at the classical virtues and what they consist of. First of all, and this is one of the things that Jim Stenson talked about in his presentation, and I was able to get a copy of his notes, which was great. So he talked about faith. He talked about faith, first of all. Now, what is faith? Really, we could say it's trust. It's trust in God. As the book of Hebrews says in the New Testament, faith is the evidence of things not seen. It's belief in God, in everything that he's revealed, not only about himself, but also in the teaching of the church. What he reveals about men and women. Who we are. Who are we? Well, we're beloved children of God. We're not accidents. We are not parasites upon the earth, as some people would have you believe, extreme forms of environmentalism. We are not, we are loved. We are loved. We are directly willed. Each one of us is directly willed by God. We were thought of by God. That's what Pope Benedict used to say. We're children of God. We're on a path to either one of two places. We're ultimately headed to one of two destinations, heaven or hell. It's an unpopular saying, but it's true. Jesus talked a lot more about hell than he did about heaven. It was clear he didn't want anyone to go there. That's why he went to the cross for us. If everybody gets to go to heaven in the end, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, does it? Why suffer? Why bother? Well, we're all headed either to heaven or hell. Purgatory is not a second chance after death. Purgatory is the mudroom of heaven. It's where we get cleaned up before we go in. Everybody who's in purgatory is going to go to heaven eventually. All right? So there's one of two ultimate destinations here, and so that's where we're going. And if we don't know what the destination is, we're not going to take the steps to get there. We're going to get off track. We're going to drift. What are we called to do here on earth? We're called to serve God and serve other people. Love God, love other people. It's pretty simple. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's what Jesus said. Start off with the people closest to us, our family and our friends, and very often they're the hardest to love, right? So we've got to see our life the way God sees it. That's really what faith is about. We have to obey God's will first, ahead of everything else. And this is what the martyrs are really all about. Today's the feast day of St. Polycarp. They loved God more than they loved their own lives, the martyrs. They loved the truth more than they loved their own lives. I just thought of St. Thomas More, and I haven't read that play, A Man for All Seasons. Perhaps you have. I hear it's just amazing. I've got to see it. But I think it's in that play where Thomas More says to, I think it's Richie Rich. Remember the comic strip, Richie Rich? Anyways, Richard Rich. He said, you know, you're gonna disobey God's truth so that you can get control of whales? Like, giving it up for whales? Really? Come on, you're going to give up heaven for whales? That's kind of the idea here. So God's will has to come first, even for our own lives. The second thing is hope. Okay, so there's faith, hope, and love. Let's talk about hope for just a second. Hope is the confidence that God is going to give us what we need for our salvation. This is really tied into the fatherhood of God, that he watches over everything in our life with loving providence. And even if something from a human perspective bad happens, some sort of a setback, some sort of a calamity, well, for a child of God, we look at it a little bit differently. It's not easy, but we do know that all things work together for the good. Romans 8:28. So it's not completely overwhelming. It might be difficult, but God has a purpose in it. He's going to bring good out of it. And so we can think of, as Jim Stenson says, the anchor. The anchor is really the symbol for hope. That's the image for the virtue of hope, the anchor. That's what's going to hold us fast to God amidst all the storms of life. And then the last thing is charity. That is love of God. Love of God, love of one another. And sometimes it's called, you know, I just call it love because most people don't really know what charity means anymore. But love for God, love for others. And again, it has to come before even love for one's own life. So love your neighbor as you love yourself. You have to come last, but you do have to love yourself. That is important. J-O-Y, Jesus first, others second, yourself last. It's really important. So that's what we need to inculcate in our kids. But there are these other virtues too that we have to talk about. We have to talk about prudence. Now, if you grew up and you were never schooled in the virtues, here's another way to look at prudence. Sound judgment. We need this. We need this more than ever today. Jim Stenson says it's the acquired ability. You don't fall out of the womb with good judgment necessarily. It's the acquired ability to accurately assess the situation, people, events, issues, ideas, evaluate human affairs, their causes, what set this up, what are their implications. It's a commitment to the truth, to recognize propaganda and lies whenever we see them. We need this ever more in this day and age. to be discriminating, to make distinctions, truth from falsehood, good from evil, fact from opinion, heroes from celebrities, reality from television, love from eroticism, the important from the squalid. A well-formed conscience, that's what you need to be prudent. So, and by the way, conscience, we talk about the need for conscience. Conscience is not just a bunch of sentimentality. The word conscience, if you break it up in Latin, it means with science, con science, with knowledge. So we have to form our conscience. We have to learn. We have to study. We have to be taught right from wrong. We can't just go by what we feel. And that's what society does today. Wants to make these gut calls on everything based on feelings. No. Sometimes your gut, you know, is very, very important as a guiding system, but you do have to form your conscience. So that means study. That means you're going to have to do a little bit of work on this. But it's worth it because we're living our lives then in accordance with the truth. Then there's justice. There's justice as well, the virtue of justice. Another way to say this, as Jim Stenson puts it, responsibility. What is justice? It's giving others what is due to them, starting with God, all right? Give people what they're due. You got to pay your taxes. You know, St. Paul talks about that in the Bible. Taxes to whom taxes are due, respect to whom respect is due. Perhaps that kid in the video, maybe now he's got the lesson. Honor to whom honor is due, that sort of thing. So this is what it's all about, justice. The rights of others impose obligations on us. This is what kids call fairness. Now, kids have an innate sense of this. We see this right away. We talked the other day about the universal moral law. This is one of the ways that we see this most clearly. When you throw a couple kids in the room and put one toy in the room, see what happens. You know, eventually one kid's going to take it from the other guy. Hey, that's not fair, the other kid will say. How do they know this? They just have this very strong sense of fairness that's right there at the earliest age. So justice, or this sense of fairness, combined with sound judgment and a good conscience, that really, really is a winning triple play there. So we've got to have respect for others' freedom, their dignity, fortitude, self-control. That's really important. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. And all of this is for the sake of others' happiness and the welfare of others. And that's really what love is all about. It's seeking the good of the other. That's what maturity really is. And that's what we've got to inculcate in people. We're going to take a really quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show. We're talking about character development. We'll be right back. 1-888-914-9149. Tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Love God and love people. We live in a world that keeps breaking, but if we want to find a way to change it, it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. Oh, this is freedom.
The U.S. Catholic bishops have stated, the threat of abortion remains our preeminent priority because it directly attacks life itself.
Because it takes place within the sanctuary of the family.
Because of the number of lives it destroys.
Let's continue to ask Our Lady's intercession.
And pray for an end to abortion in our country.
And the protection of human life from the moment of conception to natural death.
Hi, this is Bishop David Ricken of the Diocese of Green Bay. Let us pray. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly into thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee I come, before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother, the Word incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy, hear and answer me. Amen.
Add your memorares to the tally at relevantradio.com/mom.
Underwriting by John Paul the Great Catholic University. John Paul the Great Catholic University in Southern California is dedicated to impacting culture for Christ through creative arts and business innovation. Cultivate your God-given talents in a supportive, Christ-centered community as you train to become a filmmaker, writer, actor, entrepreneur, animator, illustrator, or game designer. Where will your JP Catholic education take you? Explore all our programs and receive a full application fee waiver at jpcatholic.edu/radio.
Support for Relevant Radio provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life provides home buyers and sellers an opportunity to support the pro-life movement. Real Estate for Life has nearly 1,000 pro-life realtors worldwide. When they receive their referral fee, Real Estate for Life donates 80% of the referral check to Father Bouquet's Human Life International and Relevant Radio. RealEstateForLife.org. 877-LIFE-US1. 877-LIFE-US1.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. I know how much you want to get your day off to a good start. Let me help. Every morning on the Patrick Madrid Show, you'll have 3 full hours for us to hang out together. I answer your questions, we talk about news of the day, things that really matter, things that will make your life better. Think of it as a rich, satisfying cup of coffee first thing in the morning. Join me on the Patrick Madrid Show, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific, right here on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
We could be heroes. We could be heroes. Yeah, we could. We really could. We need to practice heroic virtue. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. Jim Stenson gives us the 7 top virtues that we need in order to inculcate character in ourselves and others. And let's look at the last two. 6th is fortitude. Fortitude. Now, this probably goes by other names in the culture. You might have grown up hearing it called by other names, such as courage, perseverance, grit, toughness, guts. I like that. That's the ability to endure pain, overcome inconvenience, disappointments, setbacks, keep grinding, get through the tedium for the sake of a higher good. So for example, we've got to either solve problems or put up with them sometimes. Sometimes we have to. We've got to fight through our fears. We've got to ignore our self-centered feelings. Think about Marines. They always run to the gunfire, not away from it. And courage, of course, is compatible with being afraid. Sometimes it's choosing to advance in spite of the feeling that we feel of fear. So a courageous person, if you really have courage, you're going to do the right thing despite all of that stuff. How do kids learn this? Mostly through example. And by practice. Practice makes perfect. And then the last thing is temperance. And Jim Stenson says this is what our society might call self-control, self-discipline, self-mastery. And there's such a lack of that. Well, really in everybody, but we see it a lot in the young. And they just don't want to do anything sometimes, or they just want to give in to their vices, their addictions, whether it be substance abuse, addictions to pornography, all kinds of things that they're addicted to. And they can't overcome it. You need temperance to do that. You need self-control. And so this is really related to being tough-minded. It's really related to fortitude because you have to dominate your own passions and your own appetites for the sake of a higher good. I remember there was a lady in my parish. Her name was Rita, and she used to teach confirmation class. And she was talking to the kids. It was around the time of Lent this particular year. And she was telling the kids, you might want to think about, you don't necessarily have to do this. It's not something that you have to do as a Catholic, but it is a tradition that almost everybody does. This idea of giving up something, not that it's bad in and of itself, it's actually a good thing for the sake of a greater good. So you might want to give up candy or something or chocolate for Lent. And this kid in the class, he was about 13 years old or 14, I don't know how old he was, asked Rita, why in the world would I want to do that? And she said to him, maybe it shocked this kid. She said, well, if you can't even say no to a piece of chocolate, how in the world are you going to say no when that babe in your class in high school, you know, in years down the road or university wants you to sleep with her and you're not married to her? How on earth are you going to say no to that? And the kid was kind of shocked. He was like, I can't believe you just said that. But this is really it. This is the idea that you have to control. your passions. And St. Paul says this in the New Testament, I beat my body, and he's not actually punching himself, okay? He's not self-flagellating here. I beat my body and I make it my slave so that I myself will not be disqualified from the prize. That after preaching to others, I'm not going to fall off. I'm not going to commit sin. And so he was hard on himself. He was merciful with others, but hard on himself. And that's what we have to do as well. We have to be really hard on ourselves, but extend mercy to others who are struggling. And St. Paul didn't want to be a hypocrite. That was the last thing he wanted to be. And so he really was good at these mortifications. He had a lot of passive mortifications, being shipwrecked, being beaten, a lot of things that he didn't necessarily choose. But there were also active mortifications that he undertook so that he wouldn't get off track. And so we always have these ever-present temptations to give in to our lower inclinations, the temptations towards laziness, enjoy the good things in life, but not in moderation, too much food, too much drink, too much excess. That's the name of the game in our society. So we've got to really focus on this. And so when we think about people that we admire, very often they have this habitual power of self-control, temperance. It's something we admire in others. So these are the strengths that we need to inculcate in our kids and ourselves as well. I think that's really the key. In terms of forming this in others, especially in our kids, we've got to have it ourselves. Because kids, the example never lies. They will, and I mentioned Tiger Woods earlier. Now he had some issues in his life earlier with, you know, committing adultery and having all these affairs. He learned this from his dad, and this is well documented. When Tiger was going through all his struggles and his marriage was falling apart in 2009, all these women that he was dating, he was having affairs with, were coming out of the woodwork. Well, almost nobody remembers his high school girlfriend also came out of the woodwork. And she said that Tiger, the young Tiger, would call her on the phone every night and he would just dissolve into tears. Why? Because he found out that his dad was having an affair, cheating on his mom, and it just destroyed him. It just destroyed him. And Earl Woods, he's passed away. May he rest in peace. But the fact is, he had affairs with many women while he was married to Tiger's mom. And this is something that he saw every day growing up. And so this was what was modeled for him at some level. I'm not saying he didn't make choices and have personal responsibility here, but you can't fake this. Kids will always believe what you do. And if what you say and what you do don't match up, they're going to notice. They're like lawyers. They're going to notice. They're going to pick apart your testimony being the way that you're living in front of them. So they will always believe what you do. So that's so important for us to realize that. And any kind of talk you give your kids, any kind of correction you're going to give them, it's not going to have any effect if it's not grounded in your own example. That's what they're going to remember. Those are the things they're going to remember. It's often said that teaching, and I think this applies to parenting as well, teaching is the art of leaving vestiges. I really like that. I really like that because we don't often remember things that our teachers actually said, but we do remember them. We do remember them. We don't remember specific speeches or things our parents might have said to us, but they certainly make an impression on us. And so that's really what it's all about. If your kids respect you, they're going to imitate you, and they respect you if you practice what you preach. That's the bottom line. And this is what Jim Stenson found out when he was interviewing all these successful parents at the schools that he was running. They're really different. He said these parents were super different in terms of their temperament. Some of them were charismatic. Others were really shy. Some of them immediately seemed to know what to do in tough situations. Others were big worrywarts and they would fret about stuff. Some were really strict. Others were maybe be seen as lenient by other parents, but somehow they all succeeded. So this can cut across different personality types. The common denominator was that all of them had successful children who were competent, responsible, moral, generous men and women living by Catholic principles. And that's success right there. Not so much, you know, what they're doing, but who they are. And that's really what God wants for us. It's not the letters after our name that matter. You know, John Smith, MD, it's the letters before our name, ST, saint. That's what we're shooting for. That's what it's all about. So there's not necessarily a cookie cutter formula on exactly how to do this, but I do think it's a way we need to be aware of these virtues, and that's the bottom line here. How can we inculcate them? And so we always have to keep in mind, if you're a parent out there, this is his number one. I would say this, if you forget everything else that we talked about, you can always listen to the podcast, of course. Go to relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app, stream the podcast, download it after the show, or you can go to Apple Podcasts, you can go to Spotify, Google Podcasts, we're everywhere. But if you don't remember anything from this episode, remember that this is the one key thought of Jim Stenson in my books for parenting, and this is something that everybody forgets. He says, you always have to remember, you're raising adults, not children. You're not raising children, you're raising adults. It's so easy to forget that when the kids are young, when they're cute, but everything that you're doing, these guys are going to be adults before you know it. So you need to make every decision with that in mind. This is a future adult who's going to be hopefully a functioning and mature member of society. So yeah, that's really important. Discipline, inculcating the virtues in kids, working as a team, as husband and wife. It's super important. Don't pit one parent. Kids always want to pit one parent against another. Oh, let me try to play mom off against dad. They need to see a unified front. If there's a big decision to be made and your kid asks you about it, say, well, I've got to talk to my spouse first. And so they have one mind, they have one conscience, they have one life, your child. They've got to receive one direction coming from the parents. And I'm not talking about the band. I'm talking about, oh, here's a One Direction MP3. No, we're talking about one direction coming from two parents. The unity of approach is so important. So each of you has to be the boss, husband and wife. So that's really important. So be assertive with your kids, but be affectionate too. Don't be harshly aggressive, Stenson says, but don't be weakly sentimental either. Steady affection, clear direction. Correct the fault, not the person. Show them that you love them. And I love you too much to let you grow up with this uncorrected fault that could be a huge, huge cancerous problem if it's allowed to fester. So that's it. It works from the outside in. They've got to see it modeled. There's got to be integrity there. And then you've got to teach it. So, wow, that's we need God's help for this. But we can do it. With God's help, we can do it. So there you have it. There's so much to be said here. I wish I could say more, but I do encourage you, look into Jim Stenson, Google him. He's got a great website on parent leadership, got some great books. It's going to help you if you want to inculcate character. And it can help not just your kids, but you as well, and your spouse if you're on that journey. So let's go for it. Let's try to be the people that God's created us to be. Thanks for sticking with me on the Cale Clark Show today. We'll be back tomorrow, of course. Timory is up next. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing. Spinning some great tunes, very topical tunes. I like that. Karen Moran works social media. Patrick Alog screened the calls. We'll be back tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.